podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Telfer and on this occasion I am joined by my close associate, Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
And you know what happens when the Alfie Patton and Chantelle Steadman of the Terrace team up. Sean, you know who Alfie Patton is?
No, but I'll Google him.
That was Britain's youngest father at the age of 13. And the woman that he got pregnant. And that is right. Yes, Alfie Patton and Chantelle Steadman, we have invited you into our lower league restaurant, which is relatively well thought of on TripAdvisor. But instead of you serving you a delicious three-course meal, we're serving you up three games featuring some of the worst sides in the SPFL. You're laughing, Sean, because it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
I don't see all the times we've done this podcast, I don't know if we've watched... not necessarily terrible games, because there's some very funny moments, but certainly... At least three of the teams that we've watched this weekend are honking.
Yes, aye. And lucky for us, two of them were playing against each other. But that's right, aye. As, well, everyone's attention was focused on the Scottish Cup, and let's be honest, this year's fourth round really was a good laugh. Sean and I have kept our eyes on the regular run-of-the-mill league games that took place in the SPFL. There was a sole encounter in League One and two in League Two. And so, Sean, I think let's do a cross between Silent Witness and Dream Team. Where we'll take a look at the football dream team in forensic detail, Silent Witness. But Sean, before we get started, we were talking off air and I believe you'd like to apologise to myself and the rest of the audience for your performance on last week's podcast.
Yes, it will not happen again. My apologies.
Never before have I recorded a podcast with someone who visibly and audibly gave up halfway through.
I mean, in fairness, I suppose the fact that I could barely talk by the end of it probably made it slightly better than the norm.
It's like when we were talking about Raith Rovers, we're talking about Kelty Hearts and Airdrie, and I would say, talk about a passage of play, and then just stop speaking with the intention of you coming in, and you just stopped speaking. There's a couple of people actually got in touch with me and said, is everyone okay with Sean? And so Sean, why were you stopped speaking? What was the reason behind that?
Do you know what? I'd done a few podcasts before we recorded last Thursday's, and I'd started drinking, I probably won't do that again.
I think it's fine to do it, like, because by the time you reach your merry stage, you're at the tail end of the podcast. Mm-hmm. But at that point, we were very much not at the tail end of the podcast. There was another 45 minutes to go. But nevertheless...
Well, regardless, listen, we live and learn. We live and learn.
Like Sean and I, Sean's determined to make up for it today. And he told me off air, he said, if you don't like it, he will personally pay for a Patreon subscription for 6 months, top tier, to anyone that doesn't like it. That's what you said, Sean. That's what you told me.
I mean, that's a lie, but there we go.
Okay, I'll hold you to that, Sean. I'll hold you to that. But listen, enough about your problems with alcohol. How are things just generally? How's your sense of well-being?
Good. You know, Sean, I was disappointed at the weekend that the Scottish Cup tie against Linlithgow was off. They had plans for a big day out in Linlithgow. Instead, it became a small night out on Tuesday evening. But other than that, I cannot complain.
Well, that's good. That's good. Please state. And of course, we might as well just tack on the Scottish Cup at the end, because there was a lot of interesting stuff involving lower league teams and non-league teams that's perhaps worth discussing. But nevertheless, I'm pleased that you're up and about.
What about you over the last week? What have you been up to?
I've had a problem with planters, Sean.
And right, okay.
I want the listener's advice for this. I've had a problem with planters. Basically, Ian Greenhill, a mutual friend of ours, he's one of the people behind the scenes at A View from the Terrace, he recommended a company to me to get some planters, some terracotta planters. Now, I bought these planters in good faith, Ian. I bought these planters in good faith. Little did I know these were outdoor planters. Okay, so there's a couple of problems with that. The first one being is they've got a hole in the bottom.
The water will come out.
I found that out to my cost. I thought the soil would suck it all up, but no, it actually came out the bottom of it. I'd four of these terracotta pots in the living room. I felt like a sort of a staff member in a care home when four people have pissed themselves all at the same time, and it was like a firefighting mission with kitchen roll to try and get them all cleaned up. So one, that's the first problem, Ian, if you're listening. And the second problem is that the reason I found out they're very much outdoor is because after watering them on the Saturday, I came back into the house on the Sunday and the whole place smelled of damp terracotta.
Now, you appear to be putting a lot of the blame onto Ian Greenhill. And to be fair, I wasn't there when you had that conversation with him. However, A, did you explain everything clearly to Ian? And B, see, when you bought them, did it not say something like outdoor planters on the label?
I had to go, after buying them, I had to go back onto the website and say, oh yeah, they do say that they're really outdoor. But you know what, something, I've spoken to people, I've actually canvassed a lot of different opinion, and this is where we want the listeners to come in here. Apparently you buy like a tray to sit beneath them, and the mm-hmm. water goes into the tray, and then the plant just of its own accord sucks up the water. Mm-hmm. I believe that's how it works.
Well, that sounds doable.
Well, excellent. Well, then listeners, don't bother getting in touch. We've cracked the case already.
However, is this tray that you're going to put underneath, will that be aesthetically pleasing? Because I'd imagine they look good.
Oh, listen, Sean, my flat at the moment, the living room, certainly is all coming together. I have got a mirror on the wall, I've got some prints. It looks really quite snazzy. It's really quite homely getting. Mm-hmm. So I reckon I'll be in a position to invite people round to watch football and listen to pop music and so on.
Was that for the first time ever since you moved in?
Oh no, listen, mate, I've had people around. Don't you worry about me. I've had people around, not for a good couple of months writing up, but oh, I've had people around, boy. I've had people around.
Oh, please take it.
It's getting there. It's getting there. Yeah, it'll be nice once it's all done up. I just need to really figure out how to get the smell of damp terracotta out of the place. Once I do that, I mean, I've lit lots of candles and I've sprayed a lot of Febreze.
I was going to say, are you aware of air freshener?
Well, yes.
Or opening windows.
Yes, I mean, what part of Febreze did you not understand?
I was going to say that. Surely that's what?
To an extent, but then I've got to water them at the weekend.
To square one.
Back to square one again. Maybe I just spray them with I just go down to B&Q and get a squishy gun and just spray them.
Put in less water than the last time.
They're plants, yeah. They're not like bairns. Plants can thrive. Maybe that's how I become a deadbeat dad.
You've said that plants can thrive as if children can't.
Well, children need a lot more care and attention than plants.
They do, absolutely. I agree.
So listen, if you do have any planting advice, please put it on the Discord server and Sean and I will not read it.
Somebody might pass the message on, though.
Somebody might pass the message on. Have you ever seen the movie Downfall before?
Is that the one with they take that kind of Hitler speech and then obviously they've...
It's become a meme, yeah. But have you seen the movie? You know what happens in it?
I believe so.
Basically, it's like Hitler's last days in the bunker and he's surrounded by all these sycophants that, mm-hmm. that won't really reveal the truth to him. Mm-hmm. What I imagine the terrorist Discord to be like is like that, but it's people telling Craig Fowler's co-commentary on Hearts TV was good. So I shan't be reading. Please post it, listener. If you do have any tips, please do post it in the Discord and then it might at some point be relayed to myself and Sean. But listen, Sean, the one piece of advice I would take from that is if you are going to buy planters, do your homework first. Don't just rely on the good faith of others.
And you know, so I don't think it would require a lot of homework. Just look for the word indoor.
Don't make the same mistakes I did. You know what I should do, Sean, actually? I think that I should go out to primary schools and talk to kids about that. Like
about what not to do.
About what not to do, yeah. So look at me, I was successful, I had it all until I brought outdoor planters and had them inside.
Imagine like that there's a primary school somewhere and they have like a load of, people coming in to speak to the pupils, mm-hmm. and one week it's like a policeman and the kids are all excited. Next time it's maybe somebody in the fire brigade again, mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. exciting. And in week three, it's you coming in to talk about indoor planters.
And I think the kids would be absolutely fascinated to say, hey, listen, see in 30 years' time, by the way. in 30 years' time, you will want to take this advice on board. When you start getting properties for yourself and want to start doing what you want, planters for yourself, don't make the same mistakes I did.
And you know something? Out of the three, the policeman, the fireman, and yours would probably be the most practical of speeches.
Well, I don't know what's mean. What would the policeman say to come in and say? Just like, so I mean, I suppose the fireman would be more the most useful. Like fire safety tips. That's perhaps the most useful.
I don't know. I mean, giving people tips about how to keep plants alive. Like a lot more people are going to have plants than join the police or join the fire brigade.
Yeah, more people in the UK have plants than they do fires, I'm going to estimate.
More people in the UK have plants than cause fires.
Yes, that's an estimate. You remember chip pan fires, where they used to do the thing where it was the whole idea like don't throw water over it because that makes it go worse, and they would do the thing like a fireman would be standing miles away without like a cup and a big stick, and he would tip the water in and it would go everywhere. No, the way you're supposed to handle a chip pan fire is with a wet flannel.
Is that how you water your plants? Just like a small cup on a long pole, and then you just tip it in.
I'm not frightened of them. It's fucking. It's
they're
not like, day.
They're truffids.
I was going to say it's not day of the truffids around here. They're just plants. They just stay there. No, I'm not frightened, but I'm frightened. Like I've got beautiful herringbone flooring here, and I don't want it to. I don't want
herringbone.
It to
stay. That sounds posh.
Oh, Sean, listen, I'm a fancy guy. Next time you're in Glasgow, perhaps pop round.
I've seen your floor, only in pictorial form, but it does look lovely.
Yeah, well, next time you're in Glasgow, we'll come around and see it in real life.
I will absolutely do that.
Excellent. And that invitation, no, I was going to say extend it, but no. Would you invite a stranger into your house? Well, it depends who.
No.
I suppose it depends who. If you've got identification, we can talk about it. If not, forget it.
They must bring a passport and possibly a gas bill.
Yes, that's like me. The more I talk to you, Sean, the more I'm terrified about being like an old person. Not because you're sort of more advanced in life than me, but it's the idea of like just how old people are so easy to scam. You know, I'm trying to think people like I'm sure the guy who was the accountant at Hamilton Accies when he was late 80s, when he was tricked out of £1 million. But it's the idea like a bogus gas man can turn. I know that's a sort of a subplot in Still Game, and I think that's one of the reasons Still Game was quite popular, wasn't it? Because it did tap into a lot of anxieties that the older community have. But it looks dreadful.
I look forward to you being. Well, I don't look forward to you being scammed, but imagine somebody just chapping your door when you're in your early 80s and telling you that they're come to fix your indoor planters. In you come, son.
And then they've
nicked your telly.
Aye, that's right, my telly and my flooring.
And your planters.
Aye, my planters and my flooring. I come back in, I'm just walking around in pipes. Do you want to talk about the football?
Ah, if it must.
Yes. If it must. Yes. Well, Sean, listen, we've had a good laugh, but the laughter stops now. The laughter stops almost immediately because we are going to be discussing the two, I think. Let's just have it. The two worst teams in the country at the moment, and this
Whoa, is. I think there's one other team that right, is challenging, okay. but yes, more or less.
The two worst teams in the country. It's Peterhead and Clyde. It's pretty much the two most abject sides in the country. It was a bid to avoid automatic relegation, and Peterhead came out on top, winning 1-0. Kieran Shank's goal is first goal for the Blue Twins since joining on loan from Arbroath. That was enough to give him the edge. It was David Robertson's first win since taking charge of the club in late November. It was Peterhead's first win in over 4 months, and crucially, it's lifted them up into ninth place, 1 point ahead of Clyde. Clyde, of course, are yet to win under Jim Duffy. They've lost four in a row, and they really don't be appearing to make any progress under his regime. There are a couple of positive results at the start of his campaign, drawn with Dunfermline, drawn with Falkirk, but they haven't won a league match since the 14th of August, and they look in, well, both teams look in dire straits, but probably Clyde more so, you'd say.
Aye, very much so. I thought the funniest thing about these highlights was, do you remember a couple of years ago now when we would watch an Arbroath game? When they'd put their highlights up, and it would last 17 minutes or something like that. And I'm like, well, for the love of goodness, like who has the time to watch 17 minutes worth of Arbroath highlights? This was polar opposite. Two minutes and 27 seconds, which doesn't say too much for the quality of the spectacle that was on show on Saturday. And in all honesty, 2 minutes and 27 seconds, they probably could have trimmed a wee bit of fat.
I think they could have easily shaved off about 90 seconds off it, if we're being honest. I mean, there was a couple, in the game, there was a couple of, I think Daniel Fossu missed a couple, he missed one really, really good chance. Yep. He had a shot that from close range that he should have scored. Kieran Shanks's goal was you would say, an improvised finish. I think that's what they say in the business. Clyde...
There was a stramash towards the end where it looked like they missed, where they had a pretty good chance. It was, I'm not entirely sure how he managed to miss it, but that seemed to be it from a Clyde perspective. Peterhead, as much as both sides were dreadful, Peterhead just about deserved the 3 points, I thought. And that's, like, if I was a Clyde fan, that's now the most worrying thing, because as much as Clyde have appointed Jim Duffy, which... I'm not entirely sure that's a great appointment. Mm. They've just sold Jordan Allen to Falkirk.
That's literally happened an hour ago. That happened an hour ago.
Which is obviously going to weaken that squad even further. And their main rivals for that ninth spot, and let's face it, that's as high as either of these teams are getting this season as ninth. If there's any forward momentum whatsoever, it's coming from Peterhead.
Yeah.
And they've signed a load of players who I am reasonably unfamiliar with, but at least David Robertson and the Peterhead board are trying something. Mm-hmm. Like, they're throwing things at the wall, and presumably some of them will stick. Like we saw on Saturday, Kieran Shanks, an improvised finish. I thought the keeper could have done better, to be fair, because he telegraphed his back heel a mile away, but Neil Parry didn't seem to be aware that that's what he tried to do. But you know something? Shanks is probably I feel that's a decent sign that there was fleeting moments in his time at Arbroath. It's like, right, there is something there. And maybe League One is his level at this moment in time.
Because he joined from sort of a upper mid-table Inverurie local, upper mid-table Highland League sign. Obviously, there's a big step up, a massive step up into the Championship. So I think perhaps a bit of bedding in time in League One, albeit at a team where he's probably not going to see a lot of the ball.
No. However, of those two, and although I didn't think I would have said this at the start of the season, I mean, I remember going to a League Cup tie and Peterhead, one of the worst teams I've seen Raith Rovers come up against. One of the worst teams I've seen in real life. It was 6-0 going on 10. Could easily have been double figures. However, I would now say I would expect Peterhead to finish ninth. I still don't think they'll stay up.
No.
But Clyde are the team that now seem to be the worst of the two.
Before we come on and talk about Clyde in a wee bit of detail, I think that Peterhead, I actually think it's fair to say that Peterhead could have won this by a greater margin. We mentioned Daniel Fossu, and it was particularly a header that he had, and that would have put the score beyond any doubt. It was a really good ball that came in from the right-hand side from Jack Brown, and Fossu, he sort of peeled between the two Clyde centre-backs, and he had a free header, and you're actually... like, knowing what the score is, you're actually thinking, how on earth did he miss it? And I think that perhaps you're seeing the reason why he wasn't as successful or wasn't a success at Arbroath, just because he isn't, he's quite fit. He can run around the park a wee bit. He can occupy defenders. He's actually, his movement's pretty good, but he kind of lacks that finesse. And you saw that on two occasions on Saturday.
I mean, I suppose when it comes to Fossu, it could be that it is a lack of talent, or it could be a lack of confidence, or it could be both. Perhaps if he does get a goal, perhaps he can kick on from there. But you're right, I doubt he's going to end the season on double-figure goals for Peterhead.
What do you think about Eli Ikwa and Joshua Onyesan, who signed earlier in the week? Do you think they both signed up to the end of the season? Onyesan had a brief spell at Dumbarton. He was a name I actually recognised. How do you think these two players will get on? Or do you think they'll sort of fall into the category like a lot of the signs they made at the start of the season? Absolute punts that'll be up the road in 6 months.
The only one I recognise is Onyesan, and he was fairly dismal in terms of his time at Dumbarton. I was reading a wee bit about him today. Poor first touch. His kind of game intelligence didn't seem particularly good. Mm-hmm. Games could kind of drift by. However, the one positive was that if he seemed up for the fight, then you would get a good 90 minutes from him. But I think the general opinion was that there was surprise that he was back in the SPFL.
That's one of the things I wonder about. You mentioned about being up for the fight, and I'm sure like football players, ultimately, if you get to play at like a level, a good level. And let's face it, like League One's an all right level in the grand scheme of things. If you get to play at a level, you've obviously got a degree of competitiveness and a will to win and a desire. I just wonder if you've been playing like lower league English football and suddenly you get the chance to go and sign for Peterhead. I just kind of wonder what that must be like to sort of play for this part-time team who are sort of two different training bases that meet up with each other once a week before going to their games. I wonder what that must be like if you've never experienced that before as a football player. And it might be quite easy, given the team are in such a poor position, to not let the head drop a wee bit and just be like, well, I'm up the road in 6 months anyway. Let's just go through the motions and get it done.
And am I also right in saying that Peterhead have paid a fee? Was that the player that paid? They've paid a fee for somebody. Was it?
Is that right?
Is he the player that came from? Is he the one that came from Weymouth?
Then they've
paid a fee for him.
Well, very good. I suppose that's the Russell McLean money being reinvested in the team. But we've spoken about Peterhead earlier in the season. I think when we did the big bumper preview podcast that we go on about all the time. That was a podcast to be proud of, though, to be fair. If I'd recorded a podcast like that, I'd want to talk about it often. But we said that during the cost of living crisis, perhaps Peterhead are the side that were most affected by it. I mean, it was just a sort of a maelstrom of circumstances there. When you've got a cost of living crisis, the team perhaps players less unwilling to travel, the fact that you'd a number of experienced players moving on, like Simon Ferry left, took a number of players with him to go to Open Goal Broomhill. Scott Brown is now the Raith Rovers captain. You know, there's Russell McLean was injured and didn't really want to be there, and he's away. And these are guys that you could perhaps hang your hat on, and they don't seem to have that anymore. Plus, on top of that, a terrible injury list, I'm sure, in that game you were talking about when they played Raith Rovers, they weren't really able to fill their bench. In fact, maybe even just two substitutes in those games.
And even, you're right, but even later on in the season, maybe that might have been kind of end August, September. I remember them playing Falkirk, and it said that they had 16 players missing. So you're right, their injury record this season has been absolutely dismal. And I also think you're right in terms of how easy it is for Peterhead to now attract players. Because again, you go back a few seasons and they could attract players for an extra £100 a week or whatever. But now it's not quite that easy. That there are other clubs who will offer at least that at the lower levels. And when you add in the travelling, this is probably Peterhead's most difficult time in terms of recruit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I saw that a lot of the guys, I was looking at the Nary's Toe Poker website, and once again, Laurie, I was going to call him Laurie Sanchez there, the former, not Laurie Sanchez.
Former Northern Ireland boss.
It's Laurie Spence, you know, he is very xenophobic at times, but he does maintain a good database about comings and goings in the transfer window. And I was looking back at his database, and he was saying he just noted the players at departure, and there's a lot of sort of like overseas names, like they're an Egyptian fella, like an Egyptian under 21 or Egyptian youth player that was in the team. He's away up the road. And those guys that Jim McAnally brought in, and it was really just like, just punts, just take a gamble on them just to build a squad. And I think that there are players in there who have been good players for Peterhead and can be good players again. I'm thinking of like Jason Brown, for instance. Like Andy McCarthy's been getting a good write-up. He apparently had a very good game there. So I think that like both teams will go down. I think David Robertson has probably gone into that job knowing that's the case, that they're going to go down. However, I think they'll perhaps be in a better position next season to stabilise and consolidate in League One compared to Clyde, who you really kind of get the feeling are in a bit of a death spiral at the moment.
Oh, I very much so. Like, I would imagine that Peterhead would be in the equation next term for the promotion playoffs in League Two. Clyde, and to be fair, what I would caveat that with is that we've said similar things in the past about Dumbarton. We thought that Dumbarton might be the kind of banter club, and that they would go down into League Two, and we probably couldn't make up our mind whether they would be okay or absolutely dismal. As it turns out, they're absolutely fine this season and could very well win the league. So we have said similar-ish things in the past. However, Clyde, I don't just, I'm not going to say I worry about them because I'm not overly fussed about them. However, I do sense that of all the clubs in the SPFL at this moment in time, if I was going to pick one that have a very, very difficult future ahead of them, it's definitely Clyde. The fact that they have such a bad squad, they appear to make poor decision after poor decision after poor decision in terms of, they probably should have got rid of Danny Lennon a bit quicker. The appointment of Jim Duffy seemed like a mistake. The fact that they are now leading a nomadic existence.
Yeah.
I know there is a plan to build a stadium at Crown Point. How did they do that? I don't know. I honestly think that'll be, I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being pie in the sky. Mm. And can Clyde, who are obviously in a very difficult position already, can they afford to be not have a stadium to call their own for another one? I mean, you look at Queen's Park. I mean, they've kind of had a nomadic existence for the last 3 years. That's affected them, and they've done well. Mm-hmm. Clyde could be in the same boat, but doing really poorly. They'll go down this season, and I don't think they'll do particularly well next season in League Two either.
A lot of it depends on who they're able to bring in, of course, and that's been a massive criticism of Danny Lennon at his time. You know, we've spoken about Clyde on these podcasts in the past. We've spoken about Danny Lennon, how exalted he was in that first season when he almost got into the playoffs. Hero worshipped in the 18-19 season when they actually won promotion at the expense of Annan. Just ever since then, it's sort of been like, well, you can imagine like a season up after being so long away from like the third tier, it's all about consolidation. But then it's just, it seems to have got worse and worse and worse. And now you're faced with like just, this has all just come back to you, like really, really poor recruitment. And it's looking through the squad of players they've got, and it seems to be guys that are past their best, guys who have good players in the past, but are past their best. And you probably say, and as much as I like him, Neil Parry maybe, you probably say Peter Grant, Brian McLean, all guys that have done well in the past, but this is just perhaps the level's a wee bit too far for them. And then on top of that, you chuck in guys that just aren't quite good enough. Ross Lyon, player we've talked about, I mean, he lost his place in Stenhouse Muir. He was a right back, lost his place with Stenhouse Muir, finishing fifth in League Two last season, lost his place to a converted centre back. And Clyde are signing him for the division above, and he's playing every week. And you watch some of the highlights. Watch the game against Alloa. Not sure if we spoke about that game or just what we're watching it, but you saw him just like, he's miles off it, absolutely miles off it. And that's just one player. There's a number of players that you could look at, and there's been a number of players like that have been signed and just haven't been good enough. So if they go down next season, you would really expect Jim Duffy or whoever it is to really have to try and put a team together. But with a lack of money there, a lack of place to call your home, you're probably in a position where it's all the same. Young guys, maybe a couple of experienced heads in there.
But I think, and again, you always have to be a wee bit wary of what you read online, but certainly the suggestion is that their budget next season would really need to be culled and really need to be considerably lower than what the budget is this season. And looking at that squad and looking at their starting 11 and the guys they have on the bench, like, you can't imagine that's a massive budget. That already looks like a League Two budget. Mm-hmm. So if that's going to have to be chopped into to a big degree next term, then think, well, how how competitive can they be next season in League Two? Mm-hmm. It's, whether it's Jim Duffy, I don't know, but their appointment for next season in terms of who's in the dugout needs to be spot on.
Yeah. John Rankin, maybe? I don't know, seriously, I know John Rankin was very well thought of from his time at Clyde, and I think he's quite well regarded as a coach. Obviously, it hasn't worked well for him at Hamilton. Or maybe John Rankin's like, no, I don't want to manage a terrible club again with no money. But you know, it would say it's like fair play to the Clyde supporters, because they were very, very noisy going by the highlights, and they were singing from the first kick of the ball to the final whistle. And there was quite a funny bit where after Kieran Shanks goes in, you hear a "fuck me" that's coming from behind the camera where the Clyde fans were. That was something I quite liked. I read there was a report on Pine Bovril, the poster's name for Evo Den Beeman, who I actually know personally, and he's an absolutely smashing guy, Montrose fan, very, very good writer. he was saying that there was about, he pitched up there with Montrose having a week off. He pitched up at Balmour, and he said there was about 700 supporters there for a game, as we've billed it like the two worst teams in the country. But that's you've got to say, that's a lot of credit to the people that turned up, because you knew it was going to be rubbish. It was cold, it was windy, but folks still turned out to back their team. And see the, I really liked it, the celebrations at Shanks's goal. Shanks runs off into the corner, and you can't see it, the camera doesn't track his movements, but there's all these kids, like young team that are behind the goals, that all just run to the corner to celebrate him. I really liked that. That was my favourite moment watching the highlights. So I think you have to say, like, fair play to them. And it must be weird, like, if you were a Clyde fan who probably, like, ages with myself, maybe younger, where you've been watching Clyde at Broadwood, and Broadwood effectively becomes your home. And then, but they were abroad for about nearly 20 years.
Yep.
And then suddenly you're just not there anymore. That must be weird, like, just having to change your routine on a Saturday. You know, I know that, like as football fans, like, routine is a big thing. Like, you leave the house at the same time you're playing home. You'll go to the same place. You probably sit in the same seat in the pub. And not to have that must kind of suck a wee bit.
I remember we'd done it for about maybe two or three fixtures. A couple of years, a few years ago, when Raith were laying their new pitch, pitch.
What was that? Was that when they had the problem with when the pitch smelled of eggs?
No, that was funny. No, when they were putting down the 4G turf, so they played their home League Cup fixtures at Methil, and that was weird. But it only lasted, like, that lasted 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But for Clyde, I suppose they moved away from their original home. But then, I suppose I'm trying to put myself in the same position where I continue to support the team, but maybe the home games are played in Glenrothes.
Yeah.
Then you're forced into moving there, and then you're away to somewhere else that's reasonably close by, but still not Kirkcaldy. It's to the people who continue to do that week in, week out, I mean, fair play to them.
You can imagine Clyde, and if, say, for instance, like Crown Point falls through, and there's some dubiety of what I've read in Pine Bovell, there's some dubiety as to actually whether or not the area is suitable for football, but it's big enough to accommodate what Clyde wants to do with it, or perhaps what the regulations dictate. If that falls through, you can imagine Clyde sort of becoming like East Stirlingshire, maybe sort of like a bottom Taff Lowland League side, where they still get, like, reasonable crowds, but they don't have a home to call their own, and then you're just sort of just existing.
Aye, but then I suppose worst case scenario, you become, and again, to be fair, I don't know the ins and outs, I'm kind of aware of it, but like Rob Roy, Kirk and Tillich, who don't have a place to call their own, and it feels like they're in danger of disappearing altogether. So
yeah,
having that home is vital. I just struggle to see how Clyde are going to achieve that.
You ever wondered what would happen, or what you would do if, God forbid, like, the Rovers went out of business? The Rovers just, like, ceased. What you would do?
It's funny because when, like, last season, when they signed Goodwill, I was like, right, well, I think I'll maybe take a wee hiatus here. Went to a variety of other games. Went to Kenbeath a few times. Went to a couple of Steny games where you. And as much as I was still enjoying my Saturday afternoons, because there isn't that pool, because there isn't that kind of emotional loyalty, like, a lot of times I was digging my phone out to see how the Rovers were getting on. Now, obviously, if the Rovers didn't exist, I wouldn't have that. I suppose if I have anything like a second team, it would be Cowden Beef. But then, would I be going to Lowland League games every 2 weeks? Probably not. So I don't know. I would probably, I would attend games, but I certainly don't think I would be even remotely enjoying them as much as I do now.
Yeah, I've thought about that as well. I'd probably still go to games, like games around Glasgow, like the Albion Rovers, Partick Thistle games, Queen's Park games. But it's, you would just be going around, like, similar to yourself with Cowden. We spoke about it last time. I've got a bit of a soft spot for Queen's Park, but it's not the same. It's not your team. Like, Queen's Park, if they win, it's like a fair play. If they lose, it's like fair play. It's not, you don't have the same visceral, like, it's not in here. It's not in here, and I'd hate to think that would happen. And I've never understood people that can change the team they support.
Maybe I would just actively travel the country and supporting whoever was playing Falkirk or Dunfermline that week. I could get behind that, I think.
I don't know, man. It's like there was a period where when Stennis Muir were doing, like, well, I say a period, they've pretty much been mediocre the entire time I've been seeing them. I think it was perhaps like when Falkirk were playing really poorly. I think it was the pandemic season, you know, where they were top of the table, needed like 2 points from 6 games to guarantee a top four finish, and lost it. That was great fun. That was, you were actively looking for them to lose. But now it's like Falkirk have been that bad for so long where it's just kind of like indifference. And that's probably like an insult into Falkirk. Some supporters might be listening and saying, who the fuck's this guy? Like patronising us and patting the head. But I think there comes a point, like, hatred only gets, dislike only gets you so far. You know, I think you need to, maybe the older I'm getting, the more I've realised you need love in your life and not hatred. I know I sound like Confucius when I'm saying that there. But I'd hate to think what would happen. I actually couldn't think like anything worse than your club just not existing, or the idea of like someone trying to take your club away. And I know you've had this like with Colin McGowan, that idea where he was going to like just steamroll or like Starks Park. I remember Livingston fans when Angelo Massoni was there. I remember in the news him walking into Almondvale and a supporter confronting him. Like, I suppose like Rangers, you know, like a lot of people had a good laugh at Rangers back in 2012. And for a lot of people, given their dominance in Scottish football, that was funny. But the idea of like shysters and gangsters and hucksters coming into your club and just hollowing it out and stripping the assets and creaming off the fat for yourself, that's horrible, because you would, I don't know if you'd feel powerless to stop it, or how you would deal with that.
I tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't put an 82-year-old in charge of my cyber security like what Hamilton did. That's step one.
Oh, sorry, that I wouldn't say that discussion got heavy there. Perhaps a bit more existentialist. But yeah, let's just wrap up League Two by laughing at the how they got scammed off somebody steam cleaning the vaults. What would you say though, Sean, just before we move on into League Two, Peterhead's next game is against Queen of the South. Clyde's next game is against Dunfermline Athletic, both at home. How do you see those games going?
Clyde actually done okay the last time we played Dunfermline. 2-0 up, probably should have won. Ended up getting pegged back. I think they'll lose heavily. And as much as Queen of South are doing poorly, they're still 15 points clear of Peterhead. I suspect that Marvin Bartley will get his first win as Queen of South manager.
Yeah. Marvin Bartley's Queen of the South. That's how we formerly have to call him. Like, remember Brendan Rodgers Celtic, mm-hmm. Steven Gerrard's Rangers. Marvin Bartley's Queen of the South. Didn't realise, just when I was checking Neary's Toe Poker's database, I didn't realise that Kyle Docherty had joined Clyde. He's joined from Kelty Hearts. I think he had a very positive spell at Albion Rovers. He got a trial at Queen's Park Rangers. Obviously didn't come to anything, went to Kelty, didn't make much of an impact there, has pitched up at Clyde.
Oh, there you go. Good news. That and Cameron Selkeld.
Jim Duffy obviously knows them. If anyone can get a tune out of those boys, the Duff man can. Now, enough about terrible teams. I'm sorry, listener, that's just the market that Sean and I are dealing with. All the good teams were either in the Scottish Cup or not playing. This is the market that we are dealing with. There were three fixtures. That's, you know, our patented podcast. We give you three fixtures, and I'm sorry, but the three fixtures were all absolute gubbins. However, I would say, this actually looked like quite a good laugh. This is East Fife 1, Stranraer 3. Stranraer put a dreadful run of form behind them, where they lost 3 consecutive matches to beat East Fife at Bayview. Josh Walker, Jinky Hilton and Aaron Brown got the goals, while Scott Mercer could only pull back a consolation strike. Both teams are level with 26 points, but East Fife's superior goal difference sees them just ahead in 5th place. Sean, my lovely Sean, tell me about that one.
I am adamant that we'll be sitting here in April doing a podcast about 3 games, and we'll be talking about a team that is struggling in League Two, and we'll say, oh, really worried about them. They could really get sucked into it. I'm really worried about them, and they'll still end the season in May in the promotion playoffs. The amount of teams that we've covered this season that have been stinking, that cannot buy a win. Whether it's, we've talked about Stranraer, we've talked about East Fife, we've talked about Forfar, we've talked about Annan, we've talked about Bonnyrigg. I mean, the Stranraer's games recently, they have been absolutely dreadful. But in this game, like, yes, there was some curious defending, but they were well worth the 3 points. East Fife, who, I mean, I didn't think they turned the corner, but they had maybe, I think it was one win and two draws and a defeat from their last four games going into this one. But their home record's been terrible. They've picked up 8 points at home this season. I didn't realise quite how bad it was. And you can see why, based on this comedic defending at times, which was it Scott Mercer that was at fault for the second goal with a kind of mad swipe? I thought Stranraer were well worthy of the 3 points. Actually, if it wasn't for Alan Fleming and goals for East Fife, Stranraer could have won by more.
Yeah, I got to say, I thought the best player in the park was Aaron Brown, who has signed on loan from Stranraer, for Stranraer from Kilmarnock. He is a sort of a strapping young man, it's fair to say. He's quite, I think once he fills out, he'll be an absolute unit because he's tall and he's quite rangy. He looks like he's got quite a good burst of pace, looks quite a confident dribble of the ball, and looks a really good finisher. He won a penalty that opened the scoring that was converted by Josh Walker, and he scored the third goal to put the game beyond doubt. And he was really involved with everything good that Stranraer were in. And they seem to have a really good relationship with Kilmarnock. They've taken players on loan in the past, and this, I mean, they didn't, like, I'm trying to think, like Innes Cameron, I don't want to compare the two, it's too early days. I know that Cameron hasn't necessarily made that much of an impact at Kilmarnock. I don't think he's quite the player that people might have wanted him to be, but certainly Brown on that one game, very early days, but Brown looks a smashing piece of business, a really good signing for them.
I think so. That was the first to be seen him, and as you say, I thought it was very good. I thought if Stranraer, if they got a stroke of luck, and maybe I am by no means a Craig Anderson when it comes to knowing the rules, however, there was a point where there was I think there might have been a long through ball that was misjudged by one of the Stranraer centre-halves, and their goalkeeper, is it George O'Connor?
George O'Connor.
Came out, and I mean, it's difficult to tell from the highlights and the one camera angle whether he punched it when he was outside the box. However, he got booked for handling it outside the box.
Greg McDonald, in his post-match interview, said he asked the linesman and why O'Connor wasn't sent off. I'm thinking of Gianluigi Pagliuca against Norway in the 1994 World Cup when he comes out of the box and handles it and he was sent off. So why wasn't that the case? But apparently the linesman said it's only a booking.
Well, there you go. That would exactly explain why it was a booking. But I do think that East Fife have a weird mix of, and again, I suppose we've kind of covered it in terms of teams that we've mentioned, that they've got a weird mix of guys who are probably a wee bit over the hill, and some young guys who might go on to have a decent career, but certainly at this moment in time, they're not demonstrating enough. They're not quite ready for League Two, I would say.
I think in defence, there's a lot of big boys that play for East Fife at the back, like young big boys, or the sort of guys that if I saw them in the gym, I would move to a different part of the gym. Jim wouldn't embarrass myself in front of them. I think of guys like Sam Denham, Aaron Steele, and I think they've got something about them. Steele wasn't his best game for them. Of course, he conceded a pretty poor penalty. That was the penalty that where Brown had the run that he went on down the left, he sort of shirked one tackle, made his way into the box, and like Steele's bit of naivety sort of dangles a leg out. And actually, quite a mature play from Brown, he's only 17, saw the leg and took the opportunity to go down.
He knew what he was doing. I thought it was a penalty, but it was reasonably soft, but I did think it was clever from for Brown.
So those guys that are they have something about them. I think that there's something that can be worked. I think it's one of those maelstroms, though, when you put so many young players into the team at the one time, it's not an ideal situation. I think I don't know if this is just it's not a stereotypical, it's just one of those sort of like myths in football where if you're playing a young centre-back, you need to pair him with an older player. I'm thinking like, remember at Rangers, Davy Weir and Danny Wilson, you've got the guy who's like about 54 and a guy who's about 14 playing alongside one another, and their combined ages sort of like meet in the middle, and you've got a decent player there, a decent partnership there. I think that the problem with these five is just there's too many young guys, particularly at centre-back, and I think that guys, you kind of perhaps will want a wee bit more from the likes of Stuart Murdoch and Scott Mercer in terms of, like, these guys are quite experienced, and it's just they seem to be making similar mistakes on a week by week basis.
I know East Fife fans haven't been overly enamoured at Greg McDonald's tenure so far. I get that. However, I know that there's other teams that have been in the league that were in trouble at the bottom of League Two this season in terms of Steny, who have brought in somebody who has a reasonable track record, I suppose, and Naismith. Forfar have brought in Ray McKinnon. McDonald probably doesn't fall into that same category. I don't know if he was an overwhelmingly positive appointment when he came in, and he's done nothing so far to kind of prove the doubters wrong. But it does feel like he is dealing with a squad and probably dealing with a budget where maybe both his hands are tied, and he's just kind of been left with this squad. And as we've already pointed out, it must be very, very difficult with such a young squad and experienced players. Who Alan Troughton is a good example where this might be a season too far for him.
Yeah, I think Alan Troughton will go down as one of my favourite lower league players, because I've absolutely loved watching him, particularly, I think it was when he was at Queen's Park, but I think especially when he was working with Ray McKinnon at Brechin. Like, Brechin, their forward line, was it like Andy Jackson, Bobby Barr, Alan Troughton and Derek Carkery? Remember him? Like, that was you're going back a couple of years right enough, but that's a really explosive forward line. And I remember doing a podcast, it was either Bobby Barr or Alan Troughton, and basically Ray McKinnon said you had a six, and you'd sort of like a back six, four defenders. You had like Craig Malloy and Gary Fusco as a sort of double pivot, and the other four could just go and do what they wanted. And McKinnon's Brechin team were generally a lot of fun. But that was what it was like 2013, 2014. Back then, I mean, we're a long way away from that now. And Troughton's a real good, like, penalty box player. But it's like just age catches up with you a wee bit. And I don't know if that's the case there. But, you know, the goal that they conceded, the one where Jinky Hilton scored, that goal was very similar to the one that Adam Frizzell scored for Airdrie against Kelty Hearts last weekend. You know, where it was a ball somebody slices.
A big punt that you think, surely isn't going to cause any danger. Then it was just like a dreadful swipe at the ball from Mercer, who missed it altogether. Hilton ran it. A decent finish. But, that's meat and drink. Yeah. It should have been dealt with.
Yeah, I got to say, like, it was the goal, Brown's goal, East Fife had actually just come back into the match. It was actually Mercer sort of atoning for his mistake. That Stranraer's big problem is they're terrible at corner kicks, terrible at set pieces. And this is in a rare degree of actually doing something good. When Stephen Swift was Stenhouse Muir manager, and Stenhouse Muir beat Stranraer 3-1 earlier in the season, two of the goals came from set pieces. Nicky Jameson scored and Sean Crichton scored. And Swift, in his post-match interview, said he knew that they lacked a bit of height, so it was just easy just to chuck balls in. And you've got, like, they're really aggressive attackers. They're really good at attacking set pieces, Jameson and Crichton. And if you can get balls in, you're likely to score. And you saw that was effectively from a long throw with the ball bobbled around. Troughton sort of nudged it along to Mercer. It was a really good finish into the goal there. But, you know, it's like, see, when you look at, like, George O'Connor, when I was watching him come for that punch, he screams lower league backup goalkeeper. Do you know what I mean? It's like the guys who are, they're not particularly tall. They must be about, like, what, 5'10", who are young, they'll probably be about like 20 or so, and they're the guys who will only ever get a game if your goalkeeper gets injured or red carded. And as soon as the match finishes, you're straight on the phone to Kilmarnock or Hibs or Dundee United saying, listen, have you got a big tall boy that we can borrow for a couple of games, please? And somewhere, I don't know how long Luke Scullion, the number one goalkeeper, I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but I think that's perhaps an area that Stranraer do need to address soon, because we spoke about it the other week. I don't like referring back to, although I've done it about 14 times already, referring back to previous podcasts. And we spoke about, like, Queen of the South, for instance, with Max Curran. If you don't have a goalkeeper you can trust, it just makes everyone from the players to the supporters just make a wee bit nervy. And I do get that feeling with George O'Connor. He's probably a nice boy. He's probably a good trainer and so on. And I think that if you don't have the height, you've got to make up for it in other ways. But I just think that that's the sort of thing that can hold a team back.
I reckon we can check back in on George O'Connor in about 10 years and he'll have 21 career appearances.
I will check back in. He'll be playing for Glenafton. Listen,
I would love to have played for Glenafton. That would be class.
I'm sorry, that sounded like it was an insult. I mean, it wasn't supposed to. That wasn't supposed to. I'm sorry, George, if you're listening. It wasn't supposed to be. They have signed Finn Ikrapont. That happened earlier today. The fullback, they brought him on loan from Ayr United. I saw him playing for the Rovers last season, and I quite like the look of him. I think that he is part of the plans at Ayr United. He just needs regular game time.
I don't know how that'll ever work, because they seem to have been talking about him now for a good few years, but they constantly sign a fullback who they obviously regard as a far better option than Ikrapont, and then just loan him out. So whether he probably needs to, well, he certainly needs to drop down a level now to get games in. But I know what you're saying. He's still in the plans at Ayr United. I suspect he won't be at Ayr United next season. And if he is, he will be a way out on loan again.
You know, to touch on a point that you made earlier, it's remarkable. I was looking at, you mentioned his Fife's record. They just won one of their last 9 matches and they're still just outside the playoffs. And it says like so much about the competitiveness of that division. And I was asked by the SPFL, they got in touch with me last week to write up a wee bit about League 2. And they had 4 questions asked to give my thoughts on them. The first one was, why is League 2 so competitive this year? And it just seems to be the lack of consistency, where there are teams who have punched above their weight. I'd say like Bonnyrigg to begin with punched above their weight. They got, what, 7 points from their first 3 games. Teams have badly underperformed, like Forfar and Stenisbury and Athletic. But you're seeing changes have been made at the clubs. Like, I think managers have been moved out at the right time. Players have come in January, and I think what you're going to see very shortly is probably actually in 2 or 3 weeks is the division is going to stretch out a wee bit. You'll see the teams who, I think at the moment, every single team, and I include like Bonnyrigg, that can see themselves as finishing in the top 4, because those 2 other places, 3rd and 4th, they're up for grabs. It's just, I think it's going to become quite splintered soon. I think this is the period where the teams will get their act together. Forfar have done it. Annan are in the process of doing it. Stenhouse Muir, I'm 4 points out of Naismith's first 2 games. That's all right. Don't think a corner's been turned, but at least you're looking left or right. So that's I think it'll be interesting. But
I still think the bottom 3 will be the 2 teams that we're just talking about, East Fife and Stranraer and Bonnyrigg. I think that's your bottom 3. And I think Forfar will kick on, Stenny will kick on, Annan appear to have got a good bit of form under the belt now, and that kind of leaves everybody else, of which... And funny enough, all the things that we've said about East Fife in terms of they've got a load of young players and their experienced players are maybe a wee bit too old now. There's a degree of that about Stranraer as well, and I think that's what will ultimately hold them back, albeit like they're 6 and just behind these 5, so again the 2 of them might be saying, well, we've got a great chance of getting in the top 4. Yes, I suppose they do, but I think teams will catch up and overtake them rather than vice versa.
Aye, but that's, you know, something you and I, Sean, we could be doing this podcast in a fortnight's time and talking about how Elgin City are struggling, you know, and they're going nowhere. It's such a, I suppose that's the nature of like just like being a pundit, and I say that sort of like inverted commas. You just you talk based on what you see, and then that can completely change. I mean, how many times in this podcast or when we're making a view for the terrace, you come up with something, you've got to come up with this definitive, sweeping, all-encompassing statement, and then the team you're talking about wins 4-0 at the weekend and makes you look like a cunt. That's just what happens. It used to be the sort of thing that people would clip things and post them on, and like I mean, I'm sure like the worst one, like Tom English gets it quite bad for saying that.
It's McGinn. Point.
John McGinn, that's exactly what I was going to say. The John McGinn one, like saying that like Celtic shouldn't go for him, he couldn't get into the Celtic team, and now he's the captain of Aston Villa, you know, and there's been touted in the, and probably perhaps not now, but been touted for big money moves higher up the food chain. It's just that's the problem, isn't it? You stick your neck out and if people, you stick your neck out, people are going to shit in it.
Listen, I still think that Daniel Armstrong should have had a call up for that friendly against Turkey.
And I still think Daniel Armstrong should have been the League One Team of the Year that year. Graham Thewlis, if you're listening, go and fuck yourself. Anyway, next match, you, Sean. Stirling Albion versus Stranraer.
Oh, Stirling Albion. Stirling Albion home win.
Stranraer won 3-1 the last time they played each other.
Yes, but I'm still going to go for Stirling Albion.
Okay.
I like the cut of their jib at this moment in time.
Yeah, I can't wait to somebody to snip this audio, but a Stranraer fan to snip it after Stranraer absolutely do them in and be like, "Hey, McGuigan, get it right up you." The other one
somebody
is,
from somebody from the It's No Easy podcast.
are they the guys that do? I'm sure they do the Stranraer commentary,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, that's them.
I haven't listened to it.
Have you heard the commentary?
Yes.
It's similar. But in just podcast
the,
form.
It was that was it. We were speaking about it last week. I think this is before your brain switched off. We're just talking about that the game against Albion. I was just like, oh dear. Because they were absolutely barking last week. East 5, Sean, they are away at Annan Athletic.
Annan Athletic home win.
No, that's fair enough. But and that's a neat segue to talking about Annan Athletic. This is our final match in League 2. It took place at Gallabank, the Battle of the Athletics, Annan versus Bonnyrigg, and it's fair to say the home side came out on top. Aidan Smith, Max Kilsby, and a brace from Tommy Goss saw Peter Murphy's crack troops rise into fourth place while Bonnyrigg remain at the foot of the table. And I've got to say, Sean, Annan were pretty good here. Bonnyrigg were absolutely dreadful.
I would say this is as bad a performance I've seen from anybody this season. And Bear in mind, like Robbie Horn had obviously, he kind of rang the changes. I think there was seven changes. From their last game. It was three or four, certainly three new signings, maybe four debutants. It didn't make any positive changes whatsoever. And the fact of anything, like they were worse. I mean, they could have been a goal down after a few seconds. Then Paddy Martin, who they've just brought in and goals, had a brilliant save after about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And I know Robbie Horn was saying that at 1-0, he felt that his side in the first half was still in it. And I suppose, well, yes, in theory they are, because there's only one goal in it. But I didn't get that impression from the highlights that they were necessarily pushing for an equaliser.
No.
Or were even remotely on any kind of even Stephen terms with Annan. Then, as soon as the second half starts, very similar to the first half, almost 2-0 immediately.
But yeah, Goss missed a good chance I put it past the post.
But as soon as you got that second goal, which is an absolute disaster from Scott Gray.
I'm sorry, yes it is, I'm shaking my head.
Absolute disaster. Then it was a capitulation. And Horn mentioned this post-game when he felt, I don't think he said that, well, basically said at 2-0 he felt the game was over. But he sounded like he was a bit he was essentially at a loss.
Yeah.
I felt in his post game summary, and he basically said that they aren't creating anything up front, and they're far too easy to score against. Now that is a disastrous combination. But he's right. I mean, they're not just like we've spoken about Clyde, who look like they're out of their depth in League One. They very rarely get hammered, Clyde. They normally lose games reasonably narrowly. Bonnyrigg are now starting to get scudded most weeks.
That's two back-to-back 4-0 defeats. I think that the one against Albion Rovers looked really sore because I said that last time we spoke about it, because it gave the impression that Bonnyrigg had perhaps turned a corner. You know, they'd beaten Stranraer previously, they'd drawn four matches, then beaten Stranraer. Then you get hammered by Albion Rovers, and that's not just a sore one because you play badly and you lose 4-0, but it's because it's against Albion Rovers, the team who you would be like, we finish above them, will be fine. You go away to Annan, and to be fair, Annan are on a bit of form. You know, they've moved up to fourth place. It was a disastrous performance. I mean, I texted you. I was watching the highlights. highlights back, obviously knowing the score, and I text you like after 2 minutes and no goals had been scored by this point. And I text you saying like, my goodness, Bonnyrigg are terrible. And the first two chances that Annan had, they were from Bonnyrigg mistakes under no pressure whatsoever. They played their way into trouble. There's one you mentioned the first minute. They're trying to build from the back, and Bonnyrigg centre-backs don't want the ball. They just want, they're stoppers. They just want to make sure it's far away from their penalty box as possible. They're trying to build from the back, and somebody gives the ball to an Annan midfielder who plays in Chris Johnson. And I think Chris Johnson perhaps should have done better. He's a bit of an angle, he's a bit of a straightforward save for Paddy Martin. And then the same thing again, the ball gets given away in the middle of the park, and then there's like, it's Johnson's running down the line. Cuts it back to Smith. Brilliant save from Martin. That's when you mentioned when it's a real reflex save to push the ball over the top of the bar. But after that, the goals, I mean, the first one, like, Smith is, there's space in the box for Smith to finish in the 6 yard. It seemed to go through Martin a wee bit. He seemed to, and maybe given the benefit of the doubt, because it looked like Smith hammered it and it was from quite close range. But then,
but that in itself is an issue, the fact that he is able to finish from
6 yards
and nobody really near him, nobody really picking him up.
No, not at all. You've got big defenders there. That's certainly something you do with Bonnyrigg. And so with Goss, have him pinned. Put your big guys up against him. Give him something to fight about. What happens? It's a cross in. Goss wins the knockdown. It bobbles around a bit for Smith to finish. That second goal, and I don't really like digging players out or giving folk a hard time. Scott Gray's performance, based on those highlights, is one of the worst performances I've seen this season. I mean, the second, third, and fourth goals, he was directly involved in. I think of them, the second goal is perhaps the worst, because it's a Bonnyrigg corner. Ball gets chucked in, cleared, and then it's Johnson gets the ball and chips in Tommy Goss. And Gray has got about a good like 4 or 5 yards of him. All he needs to do is sort of hook the ball back where it's came, but gets himself in a fankle, it mishits it, and then Goss is just motoring through on goal. And Gray at this point is just sitting on his arse looking at but this thing, I've watched it back a couple of times. He's sitting on his arse, he turns around his head to look at the referee and is watching the referee as the referee's following the run of play. No other Bonnyrigg players are appealing for anything. The third goal, it's like him and the boy, the Aaron Arnott, who they
say is Aaron Arnott for, just getting themselves in a fankle, but it's so easy to dribble the ball between the two of them.
Aidan Smith had a right good game, dribbles between them, really good finish of Max Kilsby. And then the fourth goal is a penalty, and I do have a bit of sympathy because it could have been, it seemed to be at a coming together, like Johnson gets inside the box and Gray seems to check him.
I thought Chris Johnson was very clever here. It looked like that he didn't think he could get the ball the other side of him, but almost links arms with him. Almost felt like the coming together was instigated by Chris Johnson rather than Gray. I had a bit of sympathy for him for the fourth goal. Mm-hmm. But as you say, everything up until that point was, based on these highlights, poor.
Yeah, and like I say, I don't like to dig out players and give them a hard time, because they're just trying to play football. But that's like three goals that he was, two of them directly culpable for. Oh, you know, that's not great. And then in 81 minutes when the game's gone, then Robbie Horn makes a quadruple substitution. To what end? To what end? Is that to send a message to your players? It's not as if you're doing it maybe at two, because that was like not long after. I think that was like 6 minutes after the restart where Goss scored to put them two up. Surely you'd want to make the changes then?
I actually thought, again, see, referring back to the post-match interview where I don't know the name of the Bonnyrigg commentator, but he also does the post-game stuff. And he'd said something along the lines to Robbie, do you still think you can, you know, change it up or bring in bodies? And Robbie Horn went, I made seven changes and changed the formation like during this game.
Yeah.
And then the commentator went, great stuff, thank you. But it was just... It was just all very awkward. And I know, listen, just because he didn't have a particularly great answer for that interview doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't have any ideas for next Saturday the remainder of the season. It's a totally different scenario. However, it's how that looked, I suppose. And the fact that he's made so many changes on Saturday there, and it had no positive impact whatsoever. And we've already spoken about the fact that Bonnyrigg are very much on a kind of downward tangent at this moment in time. We've spoken about other teams in League Two over the last few weeks. It's difficult to see, unless something changes when it comes to Bonnyrigg, it's difficult to see them not finishing bottom of the pile.
That was the on Pie and Bovril. There aren't many Bonnyrigg fans, which is strange, given they have got a large home, a good League Two crowd.
A good.
They're perhaps. I was trying to think who the best supported part time teams in the country are. I was thinking perhaps Bonnyrigg and Clyde, unless are both, of course.
If you're looking for another team in League Two, Elgin always had a reasonable support for.
Particularly at home, I suppose, but they don't have. They're not very well represented on Pie and Bovril. But on the Bonnyrigg thread, that was the first time I've seen someone say we need to make a change. I mean, there's only one punter online from a very small pool. So again, you don't want to read too much into it. But that's the first thing I've seen that degree of dissent. And I don't know if changing the manager would do it. I mean, at least they've changed their goalkeeper. Paddy Martin coming in from Falkirk's, I think, is quite a good move. We've spoken about the struggles that Mark Weir and Mikey Andrews have had over the course of the season. So at least
it's an upgrade. However, if you are conceding 8, 9, 10 decent opportunities per game, probably doesn't really matter who your goalkeeper is. So yes, it is an incremental improvement on probably League Two's worst team. It kind of feels like, and there's only a couple of days left in terms of January, I don't know what their budget is. I know they've already brought in three players recently. It kind of feels like they need another three or four. And not just three or four. Like, so take Aaron Arnott as an example. He'd made some cameo performances at Startspark. I thought he was okay. I thought he might have had a career, not necessarily at Championship, but wanted him to get games. Went to Brechin. Then they get a game at Brechin. Now there might be reasons for that. Maybe it didn't suit, and maybe didn't suit the style of play. I don't know. We've all seen the lone players go to a team well, but still are still good players at the back of it. Arn it didn't look great based on these highlights. Robbie McGale that they brought in that started up front alongside Kevin Smith. He went off at half time. To be fair, that might have been because of an injury. I don't know. But if they are able to bring anybody in between now and the end of January, it needs to be players that significantly improve their starting 11.
Yeah, you said that. I don't know if you remember this last week. We spoke about Xander Murray having signed for them from Galloway Dean Rovers. Certainly the punters, not to repeat last week's podcast, of course. I feel as though I'm repeating this for your benefit, actually.
Thank goodness you are.
But it's the idea. It's like we've said that you need SPFL experience. Mm-hmm. And so you're signing a guy playing for a fairly mediocre Lowland League title. Everyone who watches him says, like, oh, he's probably too good for the Lowland League. But by the same token, it's like it's not like he's going in to sign for Forfar or Stenhouse Muir, a team that's for established SPFL players. You're going to a team who don't have that much SPFL experience. So you're not improving the quality, if you see what I mean. You're perhaps not going to be dragged up to a level or pulled up to a level. You might be just in amongst it. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. Although speaking to people who have seen him play for Galloway, they felt he was more than good enough for League Two. So maybe he will get the chance to prove that between now and the end of the season.
I hope so. You know, like, I think he seems like a pretty cool guy. He seems very charismatic, and it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. But just at the age of 31, never played at this level before. As we'll come on to, the non-league truthers might not admit it, but there is a big step up between non-league football and the SPFL. But that's Annan now. Been a very, very slow start to their campaign, but they seem to be at least they're challenging for promotion, something that we expected them at the beginning of the campaign.
I mean, I suppose what has helped them over the last month or so is that as poorly as they did over that first two-fifths of the campaign, they were never really that far away, I suppose. And now it feels like that the players, so I know Tommy Goss started the season particularly well, However, another couple of goals at the weekend. Players like Aidan Smith, Chris Johnson looked like had a really good game. So players that you would expect to do well for Annan kind of week in, week out, these guys now seem to be coming out in a game. And Max Kilsby, left-back, who's on loan from Carlisle. Annan fans seem particularly impressed with him. And I noticed today, as Carlisle just announced that he's extended his loan. Yeah, so that feels like a good move.
There was a really nice bit in the commentary as well. Actually, this is my favourite bit in the commentary because Kilsby's goal was really, really well taken. It's a really good cutback from Smith. Swings it in with his left foot into the net. But the commentator says, like Kilsby's man, Da, were watching the game and his dad was involved with the celebrations. Again, it's a nice, like we're talking about the Peterhead game of the wee kiddies running after Kieran Shanks. It was the same sort of thing. It must be class, like, watching your laddie scoring. It must be class, like, having a kid who's, like, playing football where people are cheering him on and all that, and he scores, like, a really nice goal like that.
You really are letting love into your heart. And that's a couple of times you're talking about something that's just really, really nice.
Oh, it's wholesomeness, isn't it? It's just nice. I don't know, man. Like at the weekend, it was my gran's 90th birthday, so I spent time there, and she was there with like four generations of her family from her children, her grandchildren, and her great grandchildren. I was there with my niece Georgia, who I don't see a lot often, but she's turning into a wee superstar. So it just feels nice, Sean. Huh. I know that a lot of the time I'm bitter, I'm unhappy, I'm angry, I'm sad, I lash out, I'm frustrated a lot of the time. I still am, but just let me have this one. I just like seeing, it must be class though, they're like just like having a kid and watching him score a goal in front of folk. That must be amazing.
No, it will be. You're absolutely right.
They have signed Willie Gibson, has come in. He signed earlier in the week.
So based on purely football things, that is a very good signing. I think Gibson could easily play at League One level. And ironically, the fact that he'd never picked himself or rarely picked himself to play at right back this season, I always felt held Queen of the South back. Bearing in mind, he was the manager of Queen of the South. It felt like a strange decision from him. I think if Annan were to play him at right back every week between now and the end of the season, it can only improve their squad, improve their starting 11. I suppose where it becomes difficult is I don't know when his court case is, and depending on the results of that, I suppose that could look a bit embarrassing or awkward.
No, that's. I would have said the exact same thing. I think that Gibson's played at this level before with Peterhead to a great degree of success. That was a pretty good Peterhead team that he was part of. He was part of, there was a group, weirdly, a group of players based in Dumfries area that would play for Peterhead. So it was like him, Greg Fleming, Scott Hooper, Aidan Smith. The four of them played for Peterhead. Who could be bothered with the travelling? I would want to play for a team down the road for me just so I don't have to drive everywhere. Driving's rubbish. You just think about things when you're driving. And when you start thinking about things, things get into your head and you're not in the right frame of mind. I don't like driving.
I don't drive. Well, I have driven, but only around industrial estates and car parks.
You drive
and the only thing I could concentrate on and think about was how do I get out of this car park alive? Because I was quite scared.
God, it's like if the movie Die Hard took place during one of your driving lessons. Gibson, I think Gibson will be a fine signing. It'll give him an option, give him an extra wee bit of experience and a wee bit of know-how as well. And I'm always a bit wary of that. Like somebody who has been a manager and reverts back to playing, when they go to a different club, what's their personality going to be like? Are they going to be like, oh, I wouldn't have done that? You know, like you could. I don't know how it.
I mean, in fairness, I get the impression that Willie Gibson would argue with anybody, not just his manager. So,
well, yeah, I mean,
especially if you work in Tesco.
Next match, Bonnie Riggs. Next game, we spoke about Annan are playing his five. Bonnie Riggs next game away to Dumbarton.
Oh dear. I will suggest 3 points for the Suns.
I feel like a team who are terrible at defending set, or just defending in general against the league leaders, I suppose. Dumbarton played Kilmarnock in the Scottish Cup, gave a pretty good account of themselves, actually. The I don't ever think they were likely to win, but nevertheless, it's like to go to a big team like Kilmarnock and hold your own. That's certainly something to be proud of. So it'll be interesting. I mean, they played Forfar the past week, so it's how they bounce back from that. Again, we spoke about that in last week's podcast, Sean. You had checked out by that point.
Moving on from that, I think their performance against Killy will give them, I know it was a defeat, but I think it'll give them a boost and a huge degree of confidence going into these fixtures, but I don't think they'll need a lot of confidence to win this next one.
You know what, judging based on how our general discussions go, I'm going for a Bonnie Rigg win just to make us look like a bunch of asses. That's just what happens. That's just how these things go.
No, Dumbarton will win.
Okay, now Sean, we mentioned this was going to be an SPFL exclusive podcast, but it would be remiss of us not to talk about the Scottish Cup, because as we said there were three ties that took place earlier in the week. On Monday night, Darvel recorded unarguably one of the biggest upsets in the history of the competition when they embarrassed Aberdeen and beat them 1-0. And on the Tuesday, Fowler and Joel Sked recorded a podcast up on the Patreon, so it's worth listening to. I thought that a lot of the BBC's coverage, weirdly, because you should be focusing on Darvel's achievement because it's incredible, you should be giving them all the credit. I wanted to see more from Aberdeen. I wanted to see the players coming off the pitch. I wanted to see an interview with Jim Goodwin. I wanted the camera to cut to Dave Cormack sitting in the thing. They didn't do that, so I was disappointed in that. But at least that Fowler and Joel sort of redressed that by discussing that in the podcast. But on Tuesday night, there were two rearranged fixtures from the weekend. Elgin City beat Drumchapel United 2-1, and Raith Rovers got the better of Linlithgow Rose 2-0. And Sean, we will start at Preston Field because you were there, and how was that match?
I think if you are a fan of a Championship or League One club and you go to an East of Scotland team, then Tuesday night was probably about as... It wasn't comfortable as such, but it was probably as good as it can go, I suppose, especially after a first half that finished 0-0 and Linlithgow had missed the best opportunity in that first half. However, I thought the second half, Raith were pretty good. Linlithgow fell away, whether that was to do with fitness, whether that was just because, Raith had a perfectly good goal disallowed.
Is that the header that the defender heads it back and then Gullen sort of lobs the goalkeeper?
Remarkable. But Raith got their noses in front at the start of the second half. And honestly, Linlithgow never really looked like they were going to go back into it. Oddly, there was... So we were kind of standing on the... just beyond the halfway line towards the goal that Raith were attacking in the first half. And then, because you can move anywhere... In the second half, we were behind the goals that Raith were attacking. And this is now the second time that I've experienced this at Linlithgow. And I'm not saying it's representative of Linlithgow fans in general. But I remember going there 2013 maybe, when Grant Murray was the Raith manager. Mm. And Linlithgow were excellent. Raith eventually got through 2-0, but didn't deserve it. Linlithgow were probably the better team on the day. And I remember there was a kind of... maybe three or four Linlithgow fans standing next to me. I was just here on my own. And they said something along the line, we'd spoken at some points and they knew I was a Raith fan, and they said something along the lines of, I bet you thought this would be easy, eh? Bet you thought this would be easy, but typical Rovers fan coming here, I think it would be easy. And I was like, right,
typical
well.
Typical Rovers fan coming here.
I was like, right, well, I've the Rovers have won one game in 16.
Yeah.
So I've seen Raith Rovers win once in 4 months, so no. I definitely didn't think it would be easy. You're saying that. I was like, right, okay, no worries. And then on Tuesday there, there was some chat back and forward, but then inexplicably, this kind of old guy that was standing behind us might have been one of the same guys for 10 years ago. He started saying things like, fucking Championship club, fucking Championship club, should be fucking embarrassed. And it's like, right, well, why should I be embarrassed about this? Raith are a goal up. They've had another goal disallowed. They've hit the post twice. They're kind of starting to dominate the game. Why should we be embarrassed at this? But it's like he had some kind of chip on his shoulder. But unfortunately, what happened is Raith eventually got that second goal in the event. They had a number of Raith Rovers fans saying, get that right up here, you old prick, mm-hmm. Which was unfortunate, but by the same token, he probably brought on himself. And another thing I don't like about games like this is that there seems to be I sometimes feel like there's a groundswell of opinion that it's good to not have segregation at games.
Mm.
I think it would have been a better atmosphere if there was segregation. So you just have... Yeah.
Shouting backwards and forwards, aye.
A third of the stadium Raith Rovers fans, two thirds of the stadium Linlithgow fans, but because everybody was kind of dispersed around the stadium, I thought it was kind of quite a flat atmosphere. Mm. I mean, it was fine. There was a buzz, but there wasn't really any singing. I just felt it could have been better. So I know I'm not on the bandwagon when it comes to not having segregation. I think it makes things better. But regardless, you know something. I've only been there once before. A brilliant stadium to visit, especially when it's as busy as it was on Tuesday night. I don't know what the official attendance was, but I thought it was a pretty good occasion and a pretty good attendance. But Raith looked up for it, and you know something. I think if an SPFL club goes into these games and they're up for it, then the chances are they're going to come out on top, and that's what happened.
That guy, the old curmudgeon, that was, you should be embarrassed. You should be embarrassed. It's these games. It's like, why should Raith Rovers be embarrassed at the fact that they're only beating Linlithgow 1-0? You think about it, like from a player's perspective, you're going into these games for Raith Rovers. Like, the pressure's on you to win, right? So you're perhaps going to be a little bit inhibited going into it, particularly in front of a big crowd like that, an unfamiliar ground, a tight ground, and so on. And whereas you're coming up against a team who are like well and truly up for it, there's nothing to lose. If Linlithgow get beat 5-6-0, no one minds, because there's that gap gap between the teams. So for Raith Rovers, like a 2-0 win, controlling the game, like riding out a slight bit of Linlithgow pressure and then seeing the game out comfortably, that's exactly how I would expect it to go. That's exactly what I expected to go. So I don't understand why that guy's giving you a hard time. And I suppose it ties in with a wee bit with what we saw at the Darvel game there, where a lot of the discussion became like, this Darvel team could hold their own. There's a lot of people like the SPFL, I think, what am I trying to say here, Craig? What am I trying to say? I think that there are people who don't like the SPFL for a number of reasons. Perhaps that the fact that there's a lack of credible pyramid, a lack of the fact that teams don't get promoted on merit. You know, you can win a division but not win a promotion, and so on. And so when there's an upset, then it's suddenly that's the evidence that this division is much better than the SPFL and the teams in it. And it's like, folk are saying like the Darvel side, for instance, could compete in League One. I don't think they could.
I suppose the best comparison for this Darvel team is compare them to every other team that has got promoted to the SPFL. So compare them to Bonnyrigg, compare them to Edinburgh, compare them to Cove, compare them to Kelty. Yes, I think they're better than the Bonnyrigg team that got promoted. I think they're better than that Edinburgh team that got promoted X amount of years ago. Are they better than the Cove or Kelty teams? No, I don't think so at all. I think they would be potentially challenging for the League Two title this season. But you look at we've talked about the fact that Bonnyrigg don't have SPFL experience. Darvel have that. However, those players that do have SPFL experience, by no means are they world beaters. It's not like a Kelty where they have Michael Tidzer and Thomas Riley and Jamie Bar-Jonas, for example. It's Jordan Kirkpatrick, it's Craig Moore, it's Meekin. Like, you know what I mean? It's guys who are capable at that level, but no more than that.
Aye, and I suppose it's like, you think of cup games, and there's no other way to judge how these teams would do. Cup games are the only barometer. And what it takes like for Darvel to have beaten Aberdeen, like, obviously Aberdeen were the favourites going into it. I saw the guy that runs the Scots Abroad podcast tweeting something like, if you thought this was an upset, you hadn't been paying attention. It's like, what the fuck does that mean? Why are you been tweeting about it from that account and your personal account and cross-tweeting one another if it wasn't an upset? Of course it was an upset. Of course it was a massive upset. Absolutely massive upset. But all it takes is like a team, Aberdeen going into it massively underperforming, Darvel having an excellent game, and these things happen. I mean, if these are the sort of games, if they played each other sort of like 9 times out of 10, then Aberdeen would win. You can't, I want to make it clear that I'm not doing anything to take away from Darvel, because Darvel were fucking class, and it's brilliant, and it's funny as fuck that Aberdeen got beat, and it's funny that the Darvel Twitter account admin's like patting an Aberdeen fan in the head and saying, oh, you should be
stick
proud
by them.
Stick by them, young man, because they'll go right.
Follow your local team.
I want to make that clear, that's not the case. It's, I suppose it's like we described them there as non-league truthers, that you don't know the comparison, because cup games, like cup games are by their nature a lot more emotional than league games. League games are bread and butter. League games are a slog, and the Darvel players would have been more up for that game against Aberdeen than perhaps any game that they've played in the last last calendar year. You know, and like Mick Kennedy's team talk and all that had gone viral. I did quite like that line. That sounds like it was written by Hollywood. You know, there's a man lives for 44 million minutes. I'm asking you to give me 90 of them. That was a fucking class line. So fair play to him. So there's a lot to like about it, but it's like that comparison and that, like, the West of Scotland League's better than the SPFL. Like, I don't think it's easy to get carried away. That's the thing, it's really easy to get carried away.
And that's the thing about cup games, they're all very much either or. So when you see a result like Darvel beating Aberdeen, the reactions are extreme. So it's like, right, well, it's a crying shame that there isn't a pyramid system that is easier to flow between the levels. And that is, you know, that's absolutely
that's
spot
true.
On. That is true. By the same token, like, the only reason they aren't in the Lone League this season is because they got huckled out of playoffs by Trenent last time around. And I think if you want to have another comparison with the West of Scotland League, if Auchinleck win their games in hand, they'll only be 3 points behind Darvel. Auchinleck also played Raith Rovers in the Scottish Cup this season, and I thought they were rubbish.
Mm.
But again, that's just because on the day, Auchinleck didn't perform, Raith Rovers were okay. Mm-hmm. But again, that doesn't mean that the West of Scotland League is rubbish. And also doesn't mean it's very good.
Yeah,
it's just, on the day, I watched Talbot and I didn't rate them at all, and I thought they were poor and were disappointing. So what I'm saying is don't read too much into cup results. Celebrate it for what it is. And what it is it is the best day in Darvel's history. But it doesn't necessarily mean anything else, if that makes sense.
Sean, I'm going to tell you a little story. 2019, Stenhouse, we played Pennycook Athletic in the Scottish Cup. There's no difference between Nice Scotland and the SPFL. But honestly, that Pennycook side had been in League 2, they'd have finished bottom with 8 points. There's a massive difference. But that's all it takes. I'm trying to think of that quote. What did the guy say about Margaret Thatcher? All it takes us... you've got to be lucky all the time. We just need to be lucky once.
Lucky once, that's right.
Ah, that's right. I saw that became a sort of Instagram meme. Obviously, somebody didn't know the context it was taken from. But that's what I do want to say about Darvel. I want to say I saw Ross Meakin was on the nine with Kenny Crawford on Tuesday night. And I want to say I was so fucking proud of him. Like, honestly, I love Ross Meakin. Huge fan of him. And just seeing him there, like, on live television, talking about his success with the club, I just thought it was fantastic, man. And it was like, what an ambassador for your football team. Like, just such a nice guy. And massive credit to him. And huge credit to Darvel. But it's just, as you're right, it's very easy to get caught up in it. And there's like, the pyramid exists for a reason. And yes, we're only about 5 or 6 years that it's actually been open, and yes, there are still log jams in place, and yes, we do need to ease movement between the SPFL and the Lowland and the Highland League, and yes, there needs to be greater movement between that fifth tier and the West and East of Scotland, because that playoff system just doesn't work. And the top of that, a South of Scotland team is allowed into what St Cuthbert's Wanderers got in.
You're
there.
Just there for cannon fodder, essentially.
Aye, I mean, let's face it, it was between Trenent and Darvel for that contest. So aye, that needs to change. And in an ideal world, you would just have the divisions where everything would flow between them. It's a lot more difficult than that. And excuse me, I think you ask like 100 fans what the best best way to organise league is, you get 100 different answers. So
I tell you what I would suggest though, if Darvel were to reach the playoffs again this year, don't let some of your players go on a stag do during them.
In hindsight, that was a mistake. I think Mick Kennedy would look back in that and say like I probably shouldn't have done that. Was it Daryl Meggett stag do, wasn't it?
Yes.
Aye, Daryl Meggett stag do, aye. And I suppose remember the photographs of Darren Miller, the Darvel player, covered in cash when they won the West of Scotland League. He was posing with cash. And then I'm sure I saw a picture like that was he got a hard time of it on social media and quite rightly so, because a bit vulgar. And anytime someone criticised, he would reply to them saying, "You should get your hard drive checked." So just a bit. It sounds like a cool guy, Darren Miller. But then I saw the photo guy, the boy from Trenent, when they won, he put like a pound note on his chest. I thought that was really, really funny. But no, I mean, in terms of this, Sean, like, it's been the greatest Scottish Cup upset ever. And I suppose in the distance between the teams it is. Is this, for you, the greatest Scottish Cup upset?
No. I still think Berwick versus Rangers is. And I know, I know Berwick were a second tier team. Well, yes, but there was only two tiers. And they finished 10th in the second tier, which is equivalent of finishing bottom of the third tier, if you wanted to kind of give it that modern context. And bear in mind that Rangers team, I think, got to the Cup Winners' Cup final and lost to Bayern Munich. I mean, that Rangers team was, at the time, one of the best teams in Europe. Mm-hmm. And they lost to a reasonably abject Berwick team that finished 30 out of 40. I know Darvel have spent a lot of money on facilities, and they presumably spend okay money on their players. I would still say Berwick versus Rangers was a bigger shock because of context.
Oh no, of course, but that's that was impressive. Aberdeen are. Can you believe that Goodwin's being kept on? No, this is very much out of our wheelhouse. We are very much the kiddie sides, and we leave the big boy teams to the older guys. But I mean, that I cannot believe that Goodwin's being kept on.
Me neither. But the thing is, he will last about another 2 weeks, and then he'll be away at that point. You would imagine.
Can you imagine Hibernian beat them at the weekend?
Surely that's him. I mean, Darvel's bad, but Hibs.
Just finally, Sean, that the next round being drawn, Darvel are taking on Falkirk at Recreation Park. How do you see this one going? Can Lightning, Darvel have already beaten Montrose, they've beaten Aberdeen. Can Lightning strike a third time in the Cup?
Montrose is a weird game. Like, it certainly wasn't a 5-2 game. Darvel were certainly made the most of their chances on the day. But I do know something. I would be surprised if Darvel beat Falkirk. But I think they have a chance. However, if Falkirk play well, then yes, they'll get through. And you know something? If Falkirk play well, I think they'll get through quite comfortably.
Yeah, that's it. As we said there, it takes the small team have to be excellent and make no mistakes. The big team have to be terrible. And I'm sure that the Falkirk players, the Falkirk management will have watched that game, will know all about Darvel. It's going to be live on the telly. I think that Darvel will have made a lot of well-wishers, be a lot of people tuning in, a lot of people who want to see them do well, and that's something that Falkirk will have to be wary of. However, if they just play well, take it seriously, then it's just academic, really. It should have been academic for Aberdeen.
I mean, for a West of Scotland league to, if they could take the scalps of Montrose, Aberdeen and Falkirk all in the same season, my goodness, but I don't expect it to happen.
No. It's probably enough for tonight.
I think so. I think we've been fairly thorough.
I think so. We are going off to do a Patreon episode. Now, Andy Harrow and I had originally done this on Tuesday night, but Andy's audio, like Osama bin Laden, was compromised permanently. How do they describe it as permanently compromised? Anyway, Andy Harrow's audio, like Osama bin Laden, was killed by elite Navy SEALs wearing night vision goggles to the point where it was unlistenable. And it's a damn shame, because actually the podcast is a good laugh. But nevertheless, Sean and I are going to be discussing about some of the most interesting ins and outs that we've seen in the transfer window. These will be some players we've perhaps touched on in this podcast or previous podcasts, but or some players that we haven't at all. But nevertheless, it's going to be good fun. So we'll catch you over there. So before we do that, Sean, great to hang out with you again.
Thank you. Good to hang out with you.
And until next time, have fun at the football, but do so respectfully. That's going to be my sign off going forward. Have fun at the football, but do so respectfully. We'll see you later. Cheerio. Sports Social Podcast Network.